Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we will devote the final segment of our program today to the memory of my WNYC colleague, Steve Post. Steve passed away on Monday at the age of 70. He was beloved by so many New Yorkers for his insight, his humor, and for a unique kind of public crankiness that pinpointed many of life's absurdities, big and small, and gave voice to a reaction to them, I think, for the many who dared not to be so rude as he would or who couldn't be so funny in the face of them. Those of you newer to the station may not know Steve Post's work, since his time as an everyday classical music host ended in 2001. So we will replay a few choice moments of Steve Post on WNYC and his previous station, WBAI, and take calls from some of you who might want to remember one yourself or just tell us how Steve Post was important in your life. And here to help us through this is one of Steve Post's closest friends professionally and personally, Larry Josephson, who was the morning man on WBAI radio back in the 60s and 70s when Steve first made his name as the overnight host. Larry is also founder of the Radio Foundation. So, Larry Josephson, welcome back to the show. And I'm, of course, so sorry for all of us that it's under these circumstances.
Yeah, thanks, Brian.
Let's play a little Steve Post right away, and then we'll pay tribute. He was obsessed with Richard Nixon. And this is a 2.5-minute excerpt from a story he told of getting close to Nixon. This is, of course, very timely with the 40th anniversary this week of Nixon's resignation from the presidency. I wonder if you know this story that he told. This is post-Watergate. Do you want to set this up? Are you familiar with what we're going to play?
Yeah. He was obsessed with Nixon, not a Nixon hater, but he was like moth to a flame. He was fascinated by how he got away with it for so long, and he collected everything Nixon, books, buttons, tape, everything. And this, I believe this is the one about the you won't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
Well, he takes a pilgrimage to President Nixon's house. Again, this
right.
is after Watergate. And here's about 2.5 minutes of how that turned out for Steve Post.
There it came, larger and larger and larger. It loomed. This picture that I'd only seen in fuzzy newsprint suddenly became very clear. And as we got finally right up to it, we were able to see over the trees and into the actual house that you've occasionally seen pictures of, not very many pictures of, but we were able to see those large arched windows in the stucco Spanish-style house and the roof, the actual windows of the mansion itself. So that it could have been very possible that Richard Nixon might have been standing there at that window at that very time looking out over the ocean. And it was all very exciting, but all still somehow very abstract and removed from my gut at that point. But anyway, there we were, sitting virtually on Nixon's front lawn, what would have been, while he was president, his front lawn, because all of that was private, and also the place where the most recent picture of him was snapped, you know, the picture of him taking a walk on the beach and shaking hands with the common folk and stuff like that. And there it was, and there I was. And I sat down for a minute and altered my consciousness. Right there, on Richard Nixon's lawn, I altered my consciousness. That is to say, I meditated, friends. And when I finished altering my consciousness, figuring that to be an extremely ironic thing to do at San Clemente, I suddenly then began to get very uptight about the way I looked, because I hadn't planned to come down there, and I was sort of dressing and feeling like a California beach bum. I hadn't shaved in 2 days, and I looked at my friend and I said, "Gee, I really feel," and I meant this. I wasn't joking. I really suddenly felt this seriously. I said, "You know, I really wish I had known we were going to come down here. I look like such a slob." I said, "This is no way to come down and visit Nixon. I should have put on some clean clothes and shaved." And she looked at me and said, "Shaved? Why would you have shaved? You've got the Richard Nixon Memorial 5 o'clock shadow." And suddenly it all seemed very appropriate. And again, as I say, nobody was there. And so we turned now and we looked up at the actual estate itself and stood there. And suddenly it became very, very clear and very close to me that I was within maybe 20 or 30 feet of Richard Nixon himself. and probably Bebe Rebozo and Patton and the whole family. And I just stood there and looked with, of course, the hope that he would come out, obviously. The main hope of going down there, one would think, is that he would come out and you'd get a chance to see him and touch him and speak to him and kick him and give him the shaft.
So former WNYC host Steve Post, if you're just joining us, in his WBAI days, probably late 70s, Larry Josephson, his pilgrimage.
Yeah, that's about right. Give him the shaft was a reference to his resignation speech when he lost the California governor election, and he had this long, rambling, self-piteous thing, and he said, well, give him the shaft. And he went on, and you won't have Nixon to kick around anymore, which unfortunately wasn't true.
So let me say, and I want to open up the phones, too, for some of our listeners, Steve Post remembrances as he, if you're just joining us again, Steve Post passed away on Monday at the age of 70 after his long, long, decades-long battle with cancer. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, and we'll hear some more from the Steve Post archives with his friend and co-producer and partner in crime at WBAI Once Upon a Time, Larry Justin. I want to say for myself that listening to Steve as a teenager both did a lot to warp my mind and to inspire me into radio. He turned me on to music I didn't know. He expanded my worldview. He made this personal connection with me, as with so many listeners scattered around the New York area, as if he was my personal, curmudgeonly friend who understood something about me and my experience of the world that most people didn't get. And in no small measure, that connection that Steve established made me want to do what I do. And when I got here, I could hardly believe I was working under the same roof, and I sputtered something awkward to him on my first day or so that tried to say he was one of my radio idols when I was growing up. And, of course, Larry Justin, you can imagine his reply just stared at me and he said, so you mean you're saying I'm old?
Yeah.
And so there's a whole generation of posties like me out there, isn't there?
Yeah. He didn't take compliments well. If I may, just tell one story about Steve. He had to read an NPR spot for something called Squirrel Away, which is a noxious substance that's supposed to drive squirrels away from your house because they eat everything in sight. So he read it straight, and then he said, and who would have want to hurt the itty-bitty widow squirrels? And so Mr. Squirrel Away heard about it, called NPR, who called Larry Orfeley, who asked Steve to apologize. Big mistake.
Steve is also the first person who got me to donate money to a public radio station. I was about 15, listening to him doing Pledge Week on WBAI or whatever they called it there. And it just seemed like I wanted to be part of the support system and wanted to belong to that community that he and you were creating in some formal way. And I called in and pledged $5.
Well, thank you.
But Steve's pledge drive style was one of the most memorable things about him. And right. I'm going to play a clip here of Steve on WNYC with Robert Krulwich, of all people. Of course, these days, world famous because he's one of the hosts of Radiolab. But this is from, I don't have an exact date, but I would place this late 80s to around 1990. And this is about 2 minutes of Steve and Robert Krulwich deciding that it would be an effective way to raise money for this radio station by offering, as a thank you gift, 3 misspellings of the news director's name. The news director at the time was this guy named Dick Hinchliff, and nobody could spell his name. It was like, is it Heathcliff? Is it what? It was Hinchliff. So not that he was, you know, so well known out there, but Steve Post and Robert Krulwich decided that this would be a way to get people to donate to WNYC.
Okay. So, but first of all, let me just I always say this. Reiterate again.
Yes.
I love that. That's my favorite.
I'm
going to reiterate again the fact that if you call us at 788-9692 or 788-WNYC and make a pledge of any amount whatsoever,
all right,
for each pledge, you will get three misspellings.
Not one.
Not
more
one.
Than one.
Not one. Not two.
Not two. We even go higher than two on this program. We'll go top two. We'll go more than one, more than two. We'll add the two together to come up with a magic number
of three.
Three. Three Richard Hinchliffe misspellings for the prize, and we've already received one contribution. So,
I'm ready.
Could I begin, please, by having the correct pronunciation and spelling of Richard Hinchliffe?
Okay.
Okay.
And the spelling of his last name is H-I-N-C-H-L-I-F-F-E.
H-I-N-C-H-L-I-F-F-E.
Right.
Hinchliffe, if you will. Okay, here is the first of the three. Dink. D-I-N-K. Hinchliffe. H-I-N-C-L-I-F-F-E. Dink Hinchliffe is the first one. The second one is... this is a Semitic addresser, I believe. Mr. Richard Hinchley. Richard Hinchley. H-I-N-T-S-C-H-L-E-Y. Richard Hinchley and Dick Hinchliffe. And for the third... this is good. Joe Dick. Just Joe Dick.
Just old, you know, just plain old Joe.
I don't know, Joe Dick. I don't know. Okay, we'll give you three more. We can give you three
how
more.
How does Dick Hinchliffe get it turned to Joe Dick?
I don't know.
All right, Steve Post and Robert Krolwich. That, of course, would have inspired millions of people to donate money to support their mission-driven public radio station. But that was classic Steve, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, one of his best bits was to play the Pachelbel canon, which was hated by classical music people because it was overplayed, and play it over and over and over again until people sent in a certain amount of money, and then he'd stop.
And then he'd stop. And that was exactly my memory of it, that it was a giveaway item, I think. Sometimes it would be a version of Pachelbel's canon that the station would give away, you know, because it was a classical music format that he was hosting. But he would tell listeners he would keep playing the pieces. And I remember one time, you know, unless this is an imagined memory, where he had different versions of Pachelbel's canon lined up, pop versions, techno, whatever. And he said, I'm not going to stop playing Pachelbel's canon until we meet this hour's goal.
Yep. So, and he always did. He always did.
I want to say that we have a wonderful obituary, highly produced by, you know, our genius producer, Sarah Fischko, on our webpage, who is also a very close friend of Steve's. So if you want to hear Sarah Fischko's obituary of Steve Post, you can hear that on our website at wnyc.org. Also, slight correction. I guess he died on Sunday, Larry?
Yeah, he died on the 3rd, yeah, on Sunday.
I said Monday, so early. I apologize. And Brooke Gladstone, host of On the Media, is calling in. Brooke, hi.
He was the only person for whom I was truly a groupie when I was 13 and 14. We would stay up and listen to The Outside all night. The Outside was the show on WBAI from midnight to 5 a.m. When he got in trouble at CW Post on some free speech issue, we baked brownies and went to CW Post. He always treated me like complete crap. And can I just say one other thing? This business of like playing a song over and over again until you finally contribute to the station. Mm-hmm. I think that this may have been first done by actually your guest, Larry Josephson, because I remember listening to WBAI in 1968 in the morning, and a woman sent a letter that Larry read that was absolutely anguished because Larry played this Tom Paxton song, Wake Up Jimmy Newman, about a soldier who had died in Vietnam, and his friend is trying to get him to wake up in the hospital. It's wrenching. It's beautiful. And she said, please, please, it makes me cry. Don't ever play it again. And then Larry said, I will continue to play this song for the rest of the hour until people contribute, you know, X amount of money. And of course he did. So I tip my hat to Larry on that one.
Thank you, Brooke. We also used Kate Smith's God Bless America over and over again.
Yeah, but I mean, to make fun of another countercultural character is just classic BAI. And that was the beauty. The reason why did I love Steve Post so much? I mean, he taught me how to be I don't know, how to be subversive, I guess. He'd have on Marshall Efron and Paul Krasner, and they'd make phony phone calls. I remember once he, back in the days when regular operators, you know, information operators were there to, you know, take whatever call number you were trying to get. He once asked for rumpled foreskin, and the operator's going, rumpled foreskin, foreskin, rumpled foreskin. I'm sorry, there is no one by that name listed in New York 7. That's the kind of thing he would do at, like, 3 o'clock in the morning.
Thanks, Brooke.
Bye.
Kate in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Kate.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
Yeah, I used to listen to The Outside also when I was 14, 15, and it kept me alive. Steve Post was so funny, and he was so paranoid. I mean, he would, like, talk about how he put, like, cardboard up over the booth he was in because he was afraid, you know, some volunteer or someone who listened to his show would see him in there. And he'd talk about being in a cab, and the thing that would scare him the most was the cab driver might ask him a question, and he'd have to talk to the cab driver.
Yeah.
And then he'd have people would call in, and they'd be like, the Enema Lady would call in, and you'd have Paul Krasner up there, and he'd have, like, Abby Hoffman, and they'd all be stoned, and they'd
phone call. Yep. Kate, thank you. He really was that shy, Larry, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. No. He just wanted the world to leave him alone and go away. So his favorite activity was sleeping. He spent most of his life on his bed or in his bed sleeping. And, you know, God love him for that. All of us, the rest of us are workaholics. Steve wasn't.
But for someone who kind of got in your face a little bit or in the face of authority through his monologues and, you know, his ad libs, he was just so painfully shy. He was kind of paranoid, as the caller said, and, you know, very afraid of people in a real sense. Before we play one more clip of Steve, I want to say, since he died of cancer, which he had battled on and off since the 80s, that one of my unforgettable memories as a listener, and I wonder if you were aware of this show, Larry, hearing Steve, I guess on WBAI at the time, and I guess it must have been right around 1980, but he did a very extended monologue about his cancer and his treatment. He had just come back from leave following his surgery, and among other things, being very funny, or radiation treatment, whatever it was, but among other things, being very funny at the same time as talking about how much pain he was in and how terrified he was. And I remember kind of laughing and cringing at the same time. And I guess it was the first time that I had heard anyone try to use humor around something as personally dark as his own life-threatening disease. Yeah. And he both made me laugh and raised my discomfort level, which I thought was an act of both creative genius and extreme personal courage to do this publicly at the time.
You used the key word about Steve Post, personal. He didn't care about fairness, objectivity, balance, canons of journalism. He just said whatever the hell came into his mind. And WNYC and WBAI supported him. They had his back. And that's very important to his success.
Do you want to talk about this last clip that we're going to play, which is 2.5 minutes of the famous window ledge story?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. On the 25th floor of the municipal building, there was a bathroom.
That's where the old WNYC studios were, right?
Right. And Steve went in there while a record was playing, about 22 minutes long, and he got locked in there, and he couldn't get out, and he was terrified that the record would end and it would go in the end groove. So he pounded on the door. Nobody answered. So he opened the window and walked out onto the
ledge. And that's enough of a setup. So now people know he accidentally locked himself in the bathroom.
Yeah.
And here is Steve himself after that incident telling the story.
I grabbed the eating section of the New York Times and dashed, pants already unbuckled, out of the studio, through the green room, and into the tiny bathroom marked Guest Lavatory. I slammed the door, whirled around to the toilet, and in the instant before my flesh made contact with the seat, I realized that I was clutching a cold metal object in my right hand. It was the inside handle of the bathroom door. I was, apparently, locked in. My bowels froze solid. Jeans and underwear bunched around my knees, I fell to the floor and crawled the few steps to the bathroom door. There, my worst fears were confirmed. The solid hardwood door was shut tight. That physical fear that one gets when in extreme danger shot up my spine. My entire body began to tingle in disbelief. Then, Steve Post, age 52, began to cry. I pulled myself upright, holding on to the sink, looked in the mirror, saw my face streaked with tears, and began to laugh hysterically. It was immediately clear to me that this was the real-life version of the radio nightmare I'd had hundreds, perhaps thousands of times. It's near airtime, and I cannot get to the microphone. Or once there, I can't speak. In one dream, I'm in New Zealand. It's 5 minutes before airtime. I'm naked and have only a subway token and a snorkel. I looked up at the window above the toilet. I knew it led to the ledge that encircled the studio complex on the 39th floor. It was a fairly wide ledge with a low embankment at its edge. Steve Post is definitely not a brave person. So why then did the same Steve Post, on this frigid and windy morning in March, dressed in jeans, a cotton shirt, and the slippers I always change into at the studio, not hesitate for a moment to climb out on a ledge, shedding its mortar 39 stories above the concrete streets of Lower Manhattan? Because the air comes first.
We remember Steve Post, a brilliant, one-of-a-kind gem, with a very good heart. You can hear Sarah Fischko's beautiful tribute to Steve Post, her produced obit, WNYC.org. Keep posting your remembrances. If you were a listener, use the Brian Lehrer Show page for that at WNYC.org. And Steve's close friend and colleague, Larry Josephson from the Radio Foundation, and formerly with them at WBAI and here at WNYC, thanks for giving us a few minutes.
Thanks for doing this, Brian.